Hey folks, thanks for joining me today. My guest is Dr. Luisa Caprano, better known as Dr. K. Now she's going to talk about her, dare I call it, adventure? No, I better not call it an adventure, because she grew up in her home country of Romania, which was under communist regime at the time, but she managed to escape and come to America. However, you would think that that story would be the end of it and it would be a fantastic story. But when she escaped to America, she fell in the clutches of her abusive father. So this story, she's going to talk a little bit about, you know, the escape from Romania, but then landing in America and not knowing a soul, just her father, and the abuse that she went through, but also the strength and the courage that she had to persevere through everything and become a doctor. So I hope you enjoy this story of courage, fight, and determination. Please welcome my guest, Dr. Luisa Caprano, the author of Push, Then Breathe, Trauma, Triumph, and the Making of an American Doctor. So please sit back and enjoy the show. Oh, by the way, remember, if you are a pet owner, please be responsible and have your pets spayed or neutered. All right, let's get into it. What was it like for you growing up in communist Romania? And then what inspired you to become a doctor, and more specifically, for females?
So, communist Romania, when I grew up in Romania, things in the beginning were quite bearable, let's call it. And then as Nicolae Ceaușescu, you know, the president, which really later on became a dictator, he started this campaign to try to pay off all the country's debts. Okay, so he worked really closely with Russia at that time, and started cutting off all the imports, but not only that, exporting a large amount of our products. Romania, just imagine Romania like a very, very small scale United States. And the only reason I say that is because we got mountains, we got plains, which again, it's huge, huge when it comes to agriculture, but also we border the Danube River, which comes right to the south part of our country, and the Black Sea. So we are not locked in. Throughout ages, throughout history, our location was very desirable, so a lot of empires tried to conquer us. So as he started doing that, life started gradually becoming very, very hard. In the spirit of the cooperative, the working together, you know, towards the greater goal, all the Marxist-Leninist philosophy. But then, as we started moving towards kind of tightening up the screws there, we had huge restriction, electricity, food, water, heat, anything they could imagine. And that was really the main goal, to make us get rid of all the debt. So that is from the economical standpoint. Political, as with all communist countries, you know, we had to follow a very, very strict dogma, the Marxist and Leninist dogma. And like I say in the book, you know, as long as you minded your own business, everything was fine. So, but when I say minded your business, you know, you didn't have the freedom of speech. You didn't have the freedom of religion. You didn't have the freedom of gathering and speaking your mind. And, you know, let's say you want to organize, you know, not an uprising, but, you know, you just had a strike. You just couldn't have any of that. Everything was very, very censored. So I grew up in this regime up until I was, 18 years and 11 months.
Yeah. Now, was it, during that time, was it more difficult for women than it was for men, as far as freedom of choice is the wrong word for me to use for a communist country, but was it more difficult for you within the option or the confinements that you had as a woman to decide to do things?
So Well, if I get your question, you are asking what were the freedoms of that a woman should have or would be able to have when it comes to her decisions, to her body decisions, you know, whether to, for instance, get health, also, you know, have a termination of pregnancy, let's put it straight up. Well, it, like you said, it's not about a freedom of choice or freedom of life. To me, it's freedom of, like, a liberty. Everyone should have a liberty to make a decision. Romania was, as I grew up, was very restrictive. The regime was very restrictive as when it came to having any type of terminations or abortions. It's not what fueled me to become a doctor, but definitely I can relate of what's happening now in the United States, and mainly because I had two close acquaintances who died due to illegal abortions. And both of them were educated women. One actually was my German teacher, and another one was a very, very good professional friend of my family. So it's, you know, it was so strict that put the, you know, the women's life in danger. But then when a person or a human wants to do something, they will find ways to do it, even at the risk of, you know, losing their lives.
Now, what put into your head that you wanted to become a doctor?
Well, I will tell you, I cannot, somebody asked me that the other day, says, and when I say the other day, a couple of months ago, says, what really does that made you desire to become a doctor? So I started going into that memory lane and like, you know, what made me have this desire? Well, as a child, I was plagued with chronic tonsils infection. I was, I had aversion to any type of foods because I was constantly sick. I was constantly on medication. And my mom and I spent countless of times through the years, you know, going to in and out of doctor's office. She resisted to give, you know, perform the surgery on me until she started realizing that it's affecting my heart. And then one day she finally said, okay, we're going to do the surgery. Well, one little caveat, the surgery, I had barely any anesthesia, okay? I was strapped to a metal chair and pretty much had them yanked out, taken out. It was very, very, very traumatic. So after I got better, which, you know, as soon as they take that nidus of infection out of a human's body, I mean, literally, after I recovered from the surgery, I was like, my God, this is how people feel who are healthy. This is amazing. So it changed my life. And since that time, I said, you know, I really, really want to be one of those. I want to be a doctor. I want to be able to change people's life for the better, to give them a better life, give them their health back.
So it was kind of an outlet to... Becoming a doctor, I guess, was more of an outlet to help people, and that was the the most direct way, I'm guessing, is that you're able to really help people by becoming a doctor because you had that firsthand experience of having somebody help you. So that, I mean, from there to how you got to America and you're probably learning a new language, I'm going to assume, and just the entire culture. So, like you said, 18 years and 11 months, your age, and then you left Romania. Now, did you leave with your mother then, or?
No. Okay. So, my father was a former political dissident in Romania. He left Romania, he escaped Romania, and then settled here in the United States. Mm. I barely knew my father throughout the years. Met him just a couple of times. My mom's marriage with my father was extremely short. You know, they actually separated before I was even born. And that, you know, the book goes through all this as well. So once I finished high school and I became 18, he reached out to me, to us, and invited me to come and visit him for a 2 months visit. Since I was 18, my mom allowed me to, you know, as an adult, allowed me to make the decision, which I did, because really, I really wanted to, who is my father? You know, I'm like, I just want to know. And, you know, every single child out there has this deep, deep desire to know their parents, to establish relationship, or even to say, hey, you know, I met my father. Okay, it's what I thought was going to be or not. So I came to the United States on April 18, 1987, for a 2 month visit. I came through New York City, and when I arrived, I felt very, very alone, obviously. I was by myself. I traveled by myself. I didn't know English. I only spoke Romanian, German, and French. And it was, I cannot emphasize, unless the people who listen to this show realize how hard it is to come into a country anywhere and not understand anyone. Everybody, and you by yourself, imagine I was almost 19 years of age. Then I said, okay, well, we'll see what happens. I met him. He lived in New Hampshire, so we arrived in New York, and then we flew into Boston, and from there we got to New Hampshire. My plan was to just that, come meet my father, visit with him for 2 months, and then turn around, go back home, go to medical school, become a doctor. Mm-hmm. I had my anatomy book with me everywhere. I was studying for the medical school admission exam that was going to be held that summer in Romania. Well, my father had widely different plans for me, to cut away all the chances for me to go back home to Romania. So it started by taking my passport away. He coerced me into changing my name and apply for political asylum in the United States.
I want to ask you about that, because you had planned and it was just a 2 month stay. Now, did he discuss and say anything to you like, okay, now that you are here, I want you to stay in America where it's going to be safer? Because at the time when you left, 1987, that was the beginning of the end of the communist regime, I believe, right? And right around 1989 is when it completely fell. So,
correct. That was not his idea.
That was not okay.
His idea was, that was not the reason. The reason for him was that he was alone at that time. He had his second marriage was over, and he wanted to have someone here to take care of him. And he did not put it that way at that time. It just over the years, I started realizing when every one of the promises that he made to me fell through. So, as I was forced pretty much to file for political asylum and remain here, other things started happening, like a deck of cards, one after the other, after the other. I suffered the mental, physical, emotional abuse at the hands of my father. I had complete dependence on him. I had no financial liberties whatsoever. I didn't know the language. I didn't know the system. I had no one, no family member in the United States that I can reach to. And then things got worse. Rape, abortions, complete dependence. I became very isolated. I was not allowed to reach out to anyone. I was not allowed to make friends. And this continues for 6 years and 8 months.
You were worse off here in America when you first came than you were in Romania. Much, much worse.
Absolutely. Yes. Yeah.
So you were saying 6 years, 8 months. You went through this terrible, terrible experience. But what kept you? There had to have been something inside of you, or maybe your mother put it in, or somehow you were so strong-willed to push ahead and move forward with your life. I just don't understand a person such as yourself being put in that position. You have to be looking at everything as where do I go? There's nothing left. And most people, I think, would feel defeated. But it does not sound like you are. There's something in you.
So, you know, people can take almost everything away from us. But that's one thing that they can't take away as long as we don't allow them to. And that's their spirit. My mom was my lighthouse. I was allowed to keep in touch with her for 59 seconds every Sunday over the phone. So I really clung on to that. So then I had a cat. So my cat, Suzette, she was the only other human that in my household besides my father. So those two things, those two elements were very, very important to my psyche, you know, the cat and the phone calls. But also there was this desire to become a doctor. So what happened was he took away slowly everything away from me. He promised me to bring my mom, to the United States, and to live with us, to remarry her. And that, as soon as I filed my political asylum paperwork, he took that away. But he couldn't take away my desire to become a doctor. So I would be able to take classes, like one course to two courses a semester. Obviously, that was, if you look at the grand scheme of things, that was something just enough to keep me alive, right? To keep my idea that, yes, I'm going to help you become a doctor. Yeah, we'll work on that. You see what I mean? So that really, I hung on to that. As I'm starting to learn the language, I started working at a grocery store. I also got my real estate licenses in the three states. But everything that I was making was going straight into his accounts. So I had no financial independence whatsoever. I lived hoping and clinging on with this dream of mine until the year, literally until 1993. It was in October in 93 that I went home for a short visit. It was right before I became an American citizen. And that time, my mom told me that she had a conversation with my father, at which point he really disclosed to her he had no desire to help me become a doctor after all. So she gathered really to us here it's an insignificant amount of money, that there is a fortune, okay, when it comes to, you know, the currency, and she gave me $1,000 cash. So those two things, almost like, you know, had my wings go back. One, I said, okay, this is not happening. I am never going to become what I want to become. But I had financially, I was trapped. So between that, when I returned home and my I returned to America, and then my jobs, I moved out. I it's just like things started lining up for me. I picked up a second job. I got a, believe it or not, I got a loan to get a car. After I put some money down from what I have, that $1,000, and I don't know how, miracles do happen. And got a car, a loan, I got a car, I got an apartment, and I moved out about 2 weeks after I received my American citizenship. So that's, I call, that I got out of his cage. I achieved my freedom.
To me, it really sounds like your dreams never die as long as you have hope. And you kept your hope alive. Now, I would imagine, too, now that you have become a U.S. citizen, that may have opened up more doors. And I believe you, did you go into the armed forces, into the military?
Yes, I did. So before that, I wanted to share with you and the audience, it's something that happens to a lot of us. So here you are, you know, putting all your, you know, you have this dream, or you have this huge, huge trial that you have to pass through, right? Then you get over that. And then you're like, okay, let me just make up for all these years. Let's make up for everything that's been lost, right? So here we are, pushing and pushing and striving. And all of a sudden, we realize that, oh my God, the one thing that I wanted the most, it's, I just have no time for it, because I gotta live. I gotta survive now from day to day, no matter what. So that's actually what happened to me. About a year later, after I got my citizenship and I moved out, I was then able to come and visit have my mom visit me. I invited her to the United States. She came for a couple of months, and this is one day that will remain famous in my life. It was Thanksgiving of 1994. We just came out of the mass, and we were walking together. And she asked me all of a sudden, says, "Luisa, what about your dream? What about your school?" And at that moment, it just hit me like, all of a sudden, I fell through the ice of a frozen lake. It just stunned me. Because, you see, I turned to her, I said, "Mom, you see, I'm working three jobs. I am barely making it." I said, "I just think it's not gonna happen." And she didn't say anything else. But that question, at that moment, I realized, and we do that. I mean, it's not just me, a lot of us do that. Most of us push things to the side for one reason or another for later. Yeah. But to see Chuck later never comes. So that day, with that question, I was like, I got to do something. I am facing the truth. I am facing the fact that I will never become a doctor if I don't start taking ownership of what I really want to do.
Yeah. You know, for folks who are watching or listening to this, you might be saying, well, I was born in America. I didn't come from a communist country. I didn't this, I didn't that. I don't understand what Dr. K is talking about. Now, here is that relevance to all of us is, like you said, we go through life, we have or had a dream, but then daily life gets in the way, and then we forget about it. But it takes somebody like your mother or somebody close to us to say and ask, what about your dream? And now it's relevant to all of us out there. So what about that dream? How did you bring it back, and how did you move forward?
Well, again, she left in January 1995. She went back home. That fall, I was enrolled and I started undergrad. I finished my undergrad in 2 years. Then I worked in research for a year in Boston, Massachusetts. Then I applied to the Air Force, to the Air Force Health Professions Scholarship Program, which is HPSP. And I got it. It's one of those monumental times for me. If you would ever ask me, hey, what are the, you know, three things in your life that stand out, is one is when I got my American citizenship. The second was this, when I got the HPSB scholarship. That was huge. That I cannot explain. When I received the phone call from the recruiter and said that you got the scholarship, because first I had to get admitted into medical school. They don't just give you the scholarship and then, hey, look for a school. No, you have to get into the medical school. So I got admitted, accepted to 5 medical schools. Then I went to them and I said, here it is, what I got into, and then I received a call. And again, it's all spelled out in the book. It's just amazing. I'll remember that until the day I die. He calls me and says, you got the scholarship. And I was so, so excited. I was beyond myself. That was, you know, the rest was really history. I got started school that very spring. I became a doctor in 2002. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, you mentioned that you're at that time, or right before that, you and your mother came out of Mass, and then that's when she asked you that question. I want to know from you then, mm-hmm. did faith play a huge role in this for you, as far as keeping your dream someplace back of your head and keeping you moving forward? Did faith give you the strength to hang in there?
Yes. I truly believe in faith.
Okay.
I am also the believer that you can just say, hey, I have faith. Everything else is going to be working out in my favor because I'm faithful and I will believe that this will happen, but I am not going to do anything to make it happen. Well, you have to. It's one of those, you know, it takes two to tango. Mm-hmm. That's what we're talking about.
That's the other thing too, is kind of what you're saying or leading up to or alluding is, you cannot be mobile about things. You have to take action. If you want something, you cannot wait for it to happen. You have to take that action to make it happen. And I think that's oftentimes people, they have their dreams, and if their dreams are still alive because they have hope, but they wait for it to happen. They don't know how to go and get it. This may sound redundant, but what made you go and get it? What strength inside? What was it that trigger or something that that people could relate to?
So there are three questions that I would like, you know, people to have in mind, because I ask myself those three questions. What did you learn from it, from your past, from your story? What drives you? And what's in your rainbow? For me, what I learned, that the past cannot be undone. You gotta let go, you gotta learn from the past, but you have to leave it behind because it's the past. A lot of people hang on to it, and that is driving them, it's sucking them off all the energy. The second, what drives me, my desire, my dream, in my case, to become a doctor. But it doesn't have to be a doctor in their case. Anyone, they can, whatever your dream is, start the business, you know, go back to school, be the best that you can be in the job that you are in. You know, just whatever makes you happy, hang on to it, and then don't let go until it's accomplished. And third, what's in my rainbow? We have to decide whether we hang on and look at our handicap, or our amazing abilities. I chose to look at my abilities. Am I able? Am I willing? Am I gung-ho enough to go after what I'm looking for? And that's what we need to do. Because if we keep looking at our handicap, it's like sabotaging, you know, self-sabotage. It's like you are in this deepest, darkest pit, tied up to a boulder, and then you're like, why can't I just fly? Well, because you're tied up, let it go. And that's the three things that I, three questions I always ask myself, and I always ask people, hey, first you have to figure out exactly what you want. If you don't know what you want, you yourself, how are you going to be able to go there and get something? You can't.
Right. Those three questions are very, very good, and they are for everybody. Now, I think also is, We cannot expect things to happen overnight. They take little steps. Sometimes it could be big steps, but they could be little steps, or it might be that big step, but then maybe you fall back a little bit. But you always have to continually move forward. So, you know, you're definitely moving forward. You've become a doctor. You're successful, and then into your third, if I can, I'll call it the third phase. Now you've become an author. You did your telemed. You're helping people around the world, but now you are an author. What motivated you, or what reason did you have to write this book, Push Then Breathe?
So the book, Chuck, has a story and a message. Mm-hmm. The story we just spoke about. The message is that we need to believe in ourselves. We need to find that dream, because every one of them has a dream, has a desire to succeed, to thrive, not only survive in life. And then take it and just run with it. Mm-hmm. That, and every one of us has to let go of their self-imposing limitations and be resilient at it. Go forth and get what is really yours. Like I say, embrace the possibilities. Yeah. You know, go out there and conquer the world. It's your world to conquer. Go get it, because nobody else is going to hand it to you and give it to you. When it comes to this book really, Push and Breathe, Trauma, Triumph, and the Making of an American Doctor, started with my memoir, my story of the first 15 years in the United States. But as I was writing it and going through the process, I realized that it's more than that. It's a message, my mission to give to the world that they themselves can too achieve things just like I had. What I would love to do, and that is my next next step, is to really put it out there for colleges, for high schools as a reading, but also for programs like, you know, psychology programs, mentoring programs, social worker programs for their students, because this book is a source of, you know, intel to realize that, you know what, we can teach our patients that this too. We can teach our patients that there is hope, that if they are resilient and they work at it, like you said, it won't come overnight. You have to be very consistent. You have to be resilient to get up even though you get kicked down. It's okay to get kicked down. The thing is, you shouldn't stay down.
Right.
Okay? You need a minute to recover, you know, dust off, shake it out, and then go back at it. Because they say in my home country, in Romania, you know, and it's here too, if you can't fit through the door, you'll have to find a window. But in my case, I would say you can't even find a keyhole. Just feel through it. You have to make it happen. There's no, you cannot. And there are ways to do it, around it, a plan B, a plan C. You do have to have different plans. And I think that is why the issue is with a lot of people. They start well. There is so much desire to do, and then something happens But that resilience is like a muscle. You know, you got to build it. Yeah. You know, it's like, what do you have all this energy? Why are you so resilient? Well, you have to really turn around and not looking only at the problem. You know, like yesterday, I had a meeting with my staff. And I said, you know, I love what you guys bringing in problems. But with every problem, I like you to bring a solution.
Yes.
Because we all can bring problems, Jack. But bringing solutions, that turns us into positive, turns us into being optimistic. And that is what it's all about. You know, because no human out there should not be able to defeat the odds.
Yeah, you know, you're right about especially one thing where you're kind of saying where we are our own worst enemy. We put doubt into our own minds. And I kind of think of it this way is, remember when we're, for not everybody, but for many people maybe, when we first started to learn to ride a bike and our mother or father was there and they pushed and we fell and we cried and we wanted to stop and they told us, get back on that bike and ride it again and again until you get it right. Mm-hmm. You know, there aren't people that push us that way now, or not too many, but I think a lot of people have experienced that at some point in time in their life. But now is the time to push ourselves. Like we said earlier, things are not going to come to us. If you want something, you must take action and do it. And, you know, you got to do it yourself. If you want it done right, do it yourself kind of thing.
Yeah, and you're right about, you know, when you said about parents, you do have to, and at least I had to, but a lot of people, all of us, we are, you know, we're very social individuals. We need a community around mm-hmm. us. It's okay to lean on. I had my own lighthouse. I believe that every human out there needs one lighthouse. One person that they trust. One person that they know they love them so much that they will not be afraid to tell them in the face what it is. Because I don't need you to sugarcoat it for me. Just say it. Give me that kick in the butt because I need it. You know, like I always say, you know, you have all these friends and then when you hit bottom, what are all my friends? Mm-hmm. There's only one or two left. And those are the friends you need to hang on to. And if they say something to you, or you go and ask them for their opinion, you know that it's coming for the good intention. You need a lighthouse. We all need a lighthouse to look up to cry to laugh with. It's very, very, very beneficial. That and keep your cup full. You may wonder what I say by that.
Yes.
So imagine that you have a cup. We all have a cup. Okay, it's what keeps us joyful. For me, it's running. Okay, I have to have that cup full. But others, I mean, it can go in any other ways. It can be gardening, reading, yoga, writing poems, just going for a walk, whatever fills your cup. But make sure it stays filled, because life sucks you of all this energy. You know, it's hard to go at this work and to achieve your goal. But that's why you have to keep your cup full and fill it often and keep replenishing it. It's like charging your battery.
I like that.
A lot of people go and forget to do that, and then they're spent. And then they need to take a couple of years to just go back on their feet. You got to balance.
Balance is key, and I think for folks who are not understanding what we're talking about as far as having your cup full, look at it this way, think about it this way, is it is your outlet. And as Dr. K said, it could be running for her, it might be reading a book for somebody else, or perhaps it's binging Netflix, I don't know, but it is an outlet that gives yourself an escape from your, I don't know if this is right, but from your daily chores. And it as you said, it basically recharges your battery, and then you're ready to go again. Dr. K, this has been a fantastic conversation. And I just want to make sure that people know once again, your book title, if you could give that to us. And I know that you have a web page, if you'd like to let us know where the web page is and how they can reach either you or the book, or perhaps they need telemed. They need to talk to you or your associates. Give us all the information.
Yeah. Sounds good. Well, this is my book. It's Pushed and Breathe, Trauma, Triumph, and the Making of an American Doctor. My website is www.drluisak.com with double S. And I'm on LinkedIn. I am on Facebook. My telemedicine practice is telemedmfm.com. You can find me anywhere. If you just put Dr. Luisa Caprano, I'm sure you will find me on Google again. I welcome your comments. I welcome you reaching out to me. I do have on each website a way that you can answer, send me your comments, your questions. But most of all, I really, really enjoy talking to you, Chuck, and spreading, you know, my vision and my mission and my call to action to everyone out there who want to achieve their dream. You can and you shall. Just keep working at it.
Dr. Luisa Caprano, thank you very much for your time today. I am going to revisit, reassess my dreams, and keep moving forward.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. And I really, really hope to see you again and be in your show again.